acceptable areas and then go off to the hospital or there to work and return and their car's broken into and things of that nature. The other thing is stolen cars. A couple have been stolen off gas stations that have left the keys in the car. Otherwise, just flat out, you know, breaking in and things. We haven't seen it that much, but this year has been kind of, it's kind of climbed up there. But on a good note, the violent, any kind of violent crime, robberies, burglaries, those are significantly down from last year. I know I worked one of the nights for Pride festivities that weekend, and it was a madhouse on Manchester. They had officers detailed to work, and then there were some secondary officers. A few calls for fights, a few drunk and disorderly, a couple, as I recall, was kind of warm out, a couple of people fell out and their masks, but nothing to really write home about. So I would call that a success as far as businesses go. I ran two calls that people always ask me about, or I get emails even from this neighborhood and some of my other ones, and that are shots fired calls. I know we've had some incidents on Gibson and Newstead and Taylor earlier in the summer. What I did was I ran numbers for the neighborhood from June 1st to yesterday. We had booked 14 shots fired calls. And a lot more calls came in maybe on the same call. So what we do is push it down into, was this, you know, the same incident, or are we having multiple situations at the same time? You can pretty much go into the information and making callbacks to the citizens, what's going on. Of those 14, three reports were taken. Okay, those yielded evidence at the scene. Okay, shell cases, being a matter of fact. Shell cases were found. The department now is sending officers the day after these calls. A lot of these calls may come out at night. A lot of this evidence might not be, you know, readily visible, or maybe, you know, sidewalk kickings or grass or something. The ballistics department in the lab is running these shells casings, excuse me, and matching them up with other weapons used in other crimes throughout the city and the county. You may ask, well, weren't they doing that all the time? When the backload wasn't so bad and there was not any crime other than discharging a weapon in the city and a shell casing was found, we would take it, but it wouldn't be as far as, you know, run expeditiously as it is now. The chief is really big on getting these reports tied to weapons, tied to people who have the weapons. Okay, so what does that mean for you? Nothing but call 911 if you hear shots fired. We also had 13 calls for fireworks, which I think is really low. I don't know about the neighborhood, but some of the other neighborhoods. But yeah, 13 calls for shots fired with the majority of the month, 4th and 5th. No arrests with that or summonses, but I think. That trying to make a delineation between the shots fired and the fireworks. And the last thing, the other handout, the commander of the 2nd District, Captain Mike Viva, and the captain of the 1st District, Captain Moore, they're having kind of a, what they call a crime summit at Bishopburg High School on Eichelberger at Hampton on the 23rd of July, it's Tuesday, beginning at 6 p.m. If you're interested, it's right in the middle of summer. I'm sure you don't have any real conflict. Couple of topics. Manpower, obviously, that's probably going to be a question. If you bring any of your questions to them, they're on the hot seat. You can talk directly with them. I know my captain's very frank with the information he gives, and it's always entertaining. You can ask him pretty much anything. There may be some other people from different departments, so, you know, break it down into maybe some burglary detectives, here, I'm sure he's invited, and we probably know that closer to the game, but, and if nothing to do, and what is in the air conditioning, and ask some questions, or what have you, that, you know, might be a good hour spent. They have plenty of parking there. They did it about a year and a half ago. As I recall, there's about 200 people. This is just from the second and the first district. It's not citywide. So they said that they have the accommodation. So, and yes, sir.
At last month's meeting, you had noted not to call about shots fired unless we could identify the source from where the shots were coming from. But today you're saying call if you hear shots fired. Just, can you clarify?
If I said that, then that was a misstatement on my part. Always call if shots fired.
So even if we, because we were talking about the echoes of the brick and everything, and that sometimes you can't tell where it's coming from.
I would be safer to call. And we get a number of calls coming in. Officers are kind of experienced to know. If there's one shot in an area that's densely populated, like say right at Taylor and Gibson, okay? The officers might think that one shot or any other calls coming in could be a backfire, just one call. Now, if we're getting multiple calls within around the area, that's going to kind of perk them up to think that something's going on, and other cars, if they're in service, might come into the area and get a better grasp on what's going on. The important thing is if you did see a subject or a house that it's coming from, if you give the dispatcher a phone number, we'll never come up to your house, we'll never come back the next day, knock on the door, anything like that. The officer might be able to get some information, if you're willing, to give them over the phone. And your anonymity would be kept. We would not, obviously, break that confidence. But say if it came from 45 something or another, and the person ran in the house, and it was a gun. But I live in the area, I don't want to, run over or what have you. We'll take that information and run it out as long as we can. If that was the what you got from that note, just always call. Frank, I appreciate you. Yeah.
And so maybe this is from the neighborhood system. Can we get a representative from the city's finest to address this meeting? I know you don't speak for them, but I feel like if they're patrolling our streets, there should be some kind of accountability and communication between the neighborhood and them.
Very reasonable.
And you're here, and we appreciate that, and you speaking to us. But we've got people with the powers of officers on the streets. I feel like there should be some kind of representation addressing it. Mm-hmm.
And for those that don't know, the neighborhood as a whole, they have contracted with a company that hires off-duty police officers, city police officers, under the color of law. They do the same thing that I can do when I'm on my radio shift or whatever. They should be doing that. So when they hear shots fired, calls, or even a disturbance, a lot of times they'll kind of chime in. They'll respond as they should if they're two person for a call like that, a fight or something like that. And sometimes, they will handle it. As I understood, this is going back a few years. One of the main reasons for them being out there is very high visibility and prevention of crimes throughout the outer parts of Manchester. I don't work secondary for them. I'm not sure what their mission statement is. Yeah, I would let them like explain to the group, but that was just one of the main aspects I didn't speak to. So, yeah.
I'm just going to say that they do report every month to the CID, and Charles Betts is the owner. We can speak to him and make sure he can come to a meeting.
Yeah.
We'll probably be happy to do
that. He's actually a police officer, and he does this area. There's some other areas in the city. Yeah, thanks.
Any more questions? Yep, great. Thank you. Next, we'll have Ron Coleman, Neighborhood Improvement Specialist.
I'll just kind of continue that conversation about the city's finest. They did just purchase the old, I guess it was an old gas station on Tower Road in Hartford, for Gibson.
Oh, wow.
They're going to be creating kind of a place where officers can go and, check in and check out. It's not like a substation, but I guess something. And then maybe store one of their vehicles out there that makes it look like there's a police department there. So, and I'll be happy to, if you want, answer somebody to contact me. I can get either Rob Betts or the TCF is hired by the Neighborhood Security Initiative Director, who works with the community improvement districts and the special business districts in this area and the Central West End. So either the director or Rob Betts. I try to make every meeting a little different, more interesting, so you kind of get an idea of what you can contact me to talk about. So, for instance, before this meeting, I was just talking to someone about who had their fence damaged by a city refuse truck. Sometimes if those dumpsters slam down and bump your fence, it punches a hole in it or knocks the chain link fence or something. It's easy. It's a simple call to Citizen Service Bureau, which now is just 311, just dial 311, and tell them that the truck damaged your fence. I'll give them the date, the time. And we have a whole fence crew that has wood slats, they have rolls of chain link, and they'll come out if they can substantiate it. There will be an investigation, and they'll repair it for you. So don't think you don't have any recourse.
We have a question?
We can also just tweet it, right?
You can. There's one of the...
Because you just take a photo of that panel.
One of the... Citizen Service Bureau representatives checks the Twitter and email all the time. So, hopefully you noticed the exercise equipment is being installed in Shoto Park. Very exciting. Thanks to the Infrastructure Committee and the chair who's right here, Julie. It's going to be a great asset for you all, I think. We tried to do it. They tried to do it so that they're... The equipment is available for different age groups, so little kids and older people as well, and do some kind of exercise.
I heard somewhere that Rainbow Park was going to be raised or removed.
Yes, it's going to be it's private property, so it's not public property. So it was sold and it's waiting for a development. So there's going to be playground equipment. They're looking at installing extensive playground equipment in the Shoto Park now as well. And they're developing a master plan. You can all ask Julie after the meeting if you have more questions.
You might also just mention that there's a basketball court.
And
also.
Basketball court you're looking at, and what else? Potentially picnic tables and seating, and maybe an amphitheater down the road. So and these are all coming from the Alderman's Ward Capital Ward money that is every year when he does the budget, he gives so much for the parks, and then this group helps decide how to spend that money. Just a quick reminder, because it's such a serious issue when it comes to recycling and the way our recycle is handled. Do not throw any plastic bags at all in those recycle dumpsters. It not only do they jam up the machines, but if you put your recycle in a plastic trash bag, it will just be thrown in the landfill. It won't even be opened up. So please just don't put your recycle in a trash bag. Just dump it in loose, and that then the machines just sort it and use magnets and blowers and everything, and it's really easy that way. Okay? Any other questions?
What do you know about the 1234 South Kings Highway, that big giant development down there by the bridge? I think it's Washoe.
Swan?
Yeah.
Yeah, no more than we talked about at the last meeting. It's Washington University is, I think they're planning on hiring another 5,000 people in the next few years, so they're just running out of space, and they're taking this old Universal Training Building and converting that to office space.
Because so, they're taking all the way to the railroad track.
Yes. So it'll be daytime employees that hopefully will walk up and patronize the business on Manchester.
Not medical or?
No, it's administrative staff. There's no clinical, it's all offices.
Mm. Has there been a traffic study done on that? It's a lot of employees, isn't it?
It is.
5,000?
Yeah.
The shuttle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Jess?
Yeah, what's the process for getting a stop sign added to the street? So I live near Newstead and Swan, and there are people that fly down Newstead after stopping the stop sign at the next street, and it's really concerning because there are a lot of kids that play, you know.
The answer may be counterintuitive, but in talking to traffic engineers that study this all their life and look at data, I've talked to our traffic commissioner multiple times about this. There will be, they look at the number of accidents there. So I know everybody says, well, there could be an accident, but we have to be reactive in this case and not proactive. So because then, surprisingly, sometimes putting up a four-way stop is actually causes more right-of-way confusion. People don't know when to go, and there's more accidents when there's more stops. So it's if you give me the intersection, I can have the traffic commissioner look at it. The Swan and, or you said?
You said, yeah. Just because, I mean, there's more housing coming up down there, too, and so there's more cars.
Okay.
So I just think it's...
I'm generally not a fan of stop signs, especially in this town, but I live near there as well, and it is a problem because it's also a blind intersection a lot of the time, like the way the cars are parking.
Yeah.
So, like, you're at the stop sign and you can't see. Now, I know there's a lot of evidence that things like adding lines and crosswalks do actually have an effect on people's behavior and cause them to slow down because they're accelerating off of a short street. They still manage to go quite quickly going through that intersection. So if you're trying to actually obey traffic laws and stop at the stop sign, you often can't see if someone's coming at you until it's too late.
Yeah.
So I would really advocate for some aid at the very least. And I know that that is something that does improve people's behavior in the way stop signs often do not.
What street is that again? Newstead and Manchester?
Swan. It's like the only one
that
doesn't have a four-way stop sign. I don't want the stop
sign.
It's
there.
It's
right
there.
Yeah, see, Jen, this gentleman doesn't want one. We've got a lot of stop signs. So.
We have one in Newstead and Norfolk, and they don't use it, so.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just a suggestion.
Oh, yeah. Four-way you want to put in. I see.
Because I'm saying the two-way is safer than the four-way.
What about traffic calming measures, like the balls that they have in Tower Grove, in Tower River, and the grassy balls? They squeeze the intersections and kind of make it so it's hard for people to accelerate quickly through them. How would we educate or apply to get those? Cause
that's something the infrastructure committee could look at.
Bill Roney's been known to have those balls in the neighborhood, but trucks do go around there, and it would be very hard to get larger traffic through those balls.
Well, I mean,
we should get better talk about the time.
I'm just saying, like, as a discussion, I think we can debate it.
Yeah.
So I just moved here from Charter Beach. Hi, my name is Maggie. I'm going to be that person tonight. I apologize. So Christine actually did a really extensive content traffic study before putting in those balls. And this is part of the whole, if you look at evidence-based improving people's behavior, things like crosswalks and lines for parking tend to be more, and the balls were a little bit more of an experiment. And as someone who lived through entire rubies until 2 months ago, they got hit a lot. And they continue to get hit a lot.
It causes people to actually swing into
the
oncoming lanes and turn around.
You can't make a right turn effectively, but Tarver Beast also has a lot more stop signs than we do here. It on the major north south street, so it's a very different traffic situation. Unfortunately, even though she did all of Crompton, she didn't do any of the adjoining streets, so there's really no way to monitor where the traffic moved to. Mm. If you're going to try to deter traffic, well, the cars have to go somewhere, and there hasn't really been any.
It shouldn't be digital, then it goes to someone else's block.
Yeah, like the talk about blocking things off. It just moves it.
It's complicated. More time than I have tonight.
I'm just going to end with saying, maybe it would be helpful to have an engineer look at it and make recommendations back to us for traffic calming, whatever that is.
Right.
Get a professional look at it.
Sure. I think if the committee comes up with some concerns, we can have the traffic commissioner come to the meeting and invite anyone else to us.
Thank you. Next, we'll have some guest speakers. So first up, we'll have Shadow Greenway present with this beautiful presentation.
How are y'all doing this evening? Can you hear me in the back okay?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hi, my name is Emma Clues, and I am thrilled to be here. I actually lived in Forest Park Southeast in 2007 and 2008 when I first moved to St. Louis, so I'm excited to be back. I love this neighborhood. And I wanted to chat with you all a little bit about the Shodo Greenway project and leave some time for questions as well. You all may have grabbed the flyer on the way in, but there are four open house feedback and fun fest events happening this month. Two of them have already passed, but another one is on Thursday at the Venture Cafe event at Cortex Commons, and then there's another one on Sunday at Kauffman Park downtown. So just if you don't get anything else from this, there are those two events and some info online that we would love to get your feedback over the next couple of weeks. So Great Rivers Greenway, just by a show of hands, you will not offend me at all. Do people know about this organization? Okay, pretty good crowd, good job. For those of you who might not, we are a regional public agency that was created by a vote of the people in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Charles County in the year 2000 to create 0.1 cent sales tax that goes back to the local parks departments and to that created our organization to connect everything together with a system of greenways. So greenways are a paved path where you can walk, run, ride a bike, get outside, separate from car traffic. So we are working on this system of greenways with input from all the residents of the region. We have about 125 miles and counting, and again in all three of those counties. They're all over the different communities. You can see on the map, or if you check on our website, the solid green lines are what's built, the red is in construction, and then the dashes are future plans to connect things together. So we work with lots of different partners. As you can see, there's 120 different towns in this region, all of the different state agencies, nonprofit organizations, community organizations. We get about 2 million trips on the greenways every year, so they are being used, which is exactly what we want to see. And we are connecting right now. The greenways connect you to 38,000 acres of public lands. We have an incredible amount of parks and green space in our region, so part of our mission is just to give you better ways to get to those places. And we take our job very seriously of stewarding your tax dollars. 93 cents on every dollar is returned to you in the form of greenways, park projects, programs, and events. So our overhead is very low. So I've talked a little bit about the greenways are this paved pathway where, again, you can walk, run, ride a bike. We're trying to make sure they're as accessible as possible. So almost all of them are ADA accessible, that people could get out in a wheelchair, push in a stroller. Again, these are for lots of different kinds of people to use them in lots of different kinds of ways. Some of them are in neighborhoods. Some of them are in business districts or along the highway right of way. Some of them are more out in nature, connecting you to those rivers, creeks, parks, all that good stuff. Our tagline is Live Life Outside. Again, you don't necessarily have to be training for a marathon or giving up your car and only walking or biking. There are however you'd like to use them. If you just want to get a picnic or walk your dog or get some fresh air, we hope that the greenways are an option for you. Lots of benefits for your personal well-being: exercise, transportation option, fresh air, connecting to nature, a chance to meet neighbors and connect to different communities. They also provide benefits for our civic well-being for our region overall. So things like putting jobs back into the local economy with construction and engineering and landscaping and things like that. Hopefully they're a way to attract and retain people to visit, to live, work, and play here as well. We're doing a lot of conservation work along the way. So this is an example of a rain garden and a lot of stormwater management. If you guys saw on that first map, a lot of the greenways are near rivers and creeks, often in floodplains, and so that's probably the best thing that could be right next to a river and creek. as we all know very well, they're going to flood. And we would rather have a park or an open space or a trail be flooded than a home or something that would be dangerous or destructive. So I'm going to just tell you a little bit about, oops, I have the wrong neighborhood on there. I apologize. I did this at my own neighborhood before this, about the Shodo Greenway. So this is a project that actually was in the plans before our organization was ever created. The original idea was to connect Forest Park to the Arch. When a lot of different partners came together to resurrect this idea a couple of years ago, so many of the neighborhoods and where people actually live are north and south of that main east-west central corridor. So we thought it was really important to broaden the mission of this. So the Shodo Greenway, which probably will be renamed, that's part of what we want your input on, is the idea of connecting Forest Park to the Arch and also Tower Grove Park to Fairground Park. So this is a huge swath of the city that touches about potentially up to 20 neighborhoods, you all being one of those. So the way that this got started, a lot of these partners came to us and were interested in doing something like this. They wanted to put up funding to do an international design competition. If you all remember, that's how the Arch renovation project got started as well, to kind of get some new ideas and get some feedback about what could happen. So we started that in 2018. We had a group of people along the bottom here as the jury, some local, some national experts that helped to evaluate the teams that submitted. We had a community advisory committee, a technical advisory group, open to public comment, and then there was this jury, like I said before. So the community advisory committee was open. We had about over 200 different people apply to be on it, and then we chose 40 that represented the neighborhoods around the area. Four different teams submitted ideas as part of the competition. These were out in exhibits all around town not this past April, but the April before. I don't know if you all saw any of those exhibits or checked them out at all. The cool thing about a competition is that all of those concepts are now the St. Louis communities to use. So if we like certain things from any of those, we can use anything from that. The STAS design team was the team that was selected. And you can see, this is just to give you an idea, the way that they made up their team is a lot of different types of firms. Some are local, some are national. Some are planners or engineers, there are artists, there was ecology and sustainability, lots of different types of folks that are working to do this planning work. So this was a little bit of what we're still studying. All still very up in the air. It's very loose planning. I just wanted to come give an update and again invite you to give your ideas and feedback. But the idea being, here are all some of the possible routes for how to go from Forest Park to the Arch and from Tower Grove to Fairground Park, with a couple options in the middle of maybe how you would kind of have a loop or a circle in the middle there. We don't know exactly what will happen. The idea being, these probably won't be all put in place, but it also probably won't just be one either. So a series of routes to get people in and out of all of these different areas. You guys know, there's a lot here. There are so many places that people might want to go, whether that's work or school or parks or a cultural destination. Really, we feel like this project is about connecting all of those islands together. I don't know about you all, but it's not always intuitive to walk or bike through some of these different places in one sitting because they're often disconnected from each other. Sometimes there's, open vacant land in between, all kinds of different conditions that you might encounter on the way. So when the competition ended, the next step is the planning. Again, we're still in the very early planning stages. The idea about the framework plan, we created a mission / vision statement. So just the idea of transforming the city by connecting people in our city's treasured places, creating inspiring experiences and equitable opportunities for growth. So one of the things about this project that we really wanted to study is the idea that even though our organization is, we're just about building greenways. We just want to try to get a path for where people can walk, run, ride a bike. But in cities across the country, we're seeing that things like this, an amenity, is attractive, which is both good and can be challenging. So other times greenway projects might also come with interest from developers, and there are good and bad consequences that can come from something like that. So we really wanted to study, before we did any designs or decided where it would go, how could we create a framework that would help to provide for other partners putting in things like affordable housing? Could we influence to make sure that we're not causing any kind of future eventual displacement or gentrification or things like that? So we're studying that, learning from some of the other, like the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, the High Line in New York, the Beltline in Atlanta. A lot of these cities are trying big projects like this. And again, we don't have the answers and we're not the people that can control, you know, the price of rent, but what could we do now to try to bring partners to the table and to try to think about those things before we start doing any design or planning? So the major intended outcomes of this project, I'm not gonna read these all to you, but I'm just trying to give you a flavor of what we're talking about. We want it to be an exceptional experience where people not only use it to get around, but it's a destination in and of itself. It's a place where people could hang out, maybe they meet up, maybe there is space for performances. That might be a place where people could set up a, you know, small business pop-up, things like that. It's good for our civic well-being. We hopefully are having an open, transparent, and inclusive process that invite people to be part of it, and it's something that people can be proud of. Obviously, connectivity is a key part of any Greenway project. We do think this can be an opportunity for economic growth. How do we do that in an equitable way is what we're studying. Environmental leadership. So baked into all of our projects, we want to make sure that we're being good stewards of the natural environment around us. And then healthy lifestyles. That's a little bit more of that inherent in the Greenway is an opportunity for people to get exercise and get outside. So that's what we've been studying over the last 6 months. What's the Greenway look and feel? Where could it possibly go? What would be the equity strategies around this area? And what would be the economic growth opportunities? So again, before any design or specifics, kind of trying to lay the groundwork on these topics. The process that we go through, this is a lot of stuff on one slide, I just wanted to show you. We kind of thought through, you know, there's folks, the residents of the region at large, elected officials, property owners, neighborhood associations, community members, businesses, our own working groups and steering committee that we put together to help steward the project. And the idea being, from an engagement perspective, we ask, align, and act. So we ask people, you know, what are their wants and needs, and what are their thoughts about a project like this? And then we align that with what's technically feasible, what are all the other factors to consider, and then hopefully we act and make some recommendations. And then we ask again, did we get that right? Let's align that with what we want, and it's an iterative process. So we're in the middle of that right now, and we'll continue to use this type of process to engage as it goes forward. We have a steering committee and 4 working groups that have been helping to guide the project, so that's about 125 folks from all the different neighborhoods, but also technical experts from the city of St. Louis, from utilities, possible future partners, a huge mix of people. We also put together an Artists of Color Council. When the teams were submitting during that competition, we didn't feel like the representation from the art community and also the racial diversity of our region was reflected as well as we would have liked. So one of the things that came out of that was putting together an Arts of Color Council to help steward the art and public art of the project and also some of the engagement efforts. So art meaning it could be what you think of like a sculpture alongside the Greenway, but it also might be a mural project. It might be a soundtrack that you listen to while you're walking around the Greenway. It could be performances, all kinds of different art that we think would be a great way to activate these spaces. Again, not going to read everything to you, but we're now in the process, this meeting being an example, of talking to stakeholders and inviting folks to give their feedback, and then doing other open houses, tabling at other folks' events. I've seen some of you all around town at some of those events as well. So here we are. We have these events in July. By the fall, we'll hopefully have this planning effort complete, and then we can start to figure out, again, probably a different name and kind of the brand and identity of the project, and then start to design specific segments from there. And then we'll have ongoing engagement as we figure out how this is going to take shape. So the two that are coming up, again, Venture Cafe on Thursday, and then in Kauffman Park on Sunday. I would love to take questions right now, and I would just encourage everybody to plug in as much as you can. We would really love to hear from you. Yeah?
What's your problem with the Shodo name?
Well, a lot of people think it's only going to be on Shodo Avenue, so it's a little bit misleading in terms of the geography. So now that it's representing such a larger area of the city, we felt like it might be in time to open up what that name should be.
Because there are already like 3 or 4 different green groups, right, doing trails and stuff, trailways. I saw your first slide. So don't you think you're going to get lost if you change your name, or you think you're going to
get lost? Our name will stay, Great Rivers Greenway. But there are lots of different greenways in the region that we're connecting together, and they all have different names, like the Mississippi Greenway goes along the Mississippi River. the Missouri Greenway, the Merrimack, Deer Creek, those types of things. So this one is not particular to a body of water, so we have an opportunity to name it something more representative of the city. Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, I understand showing the Greenway the whole way. If you bring it all the way through, I would understand it.
Okay. Well, maybe, I mean, that's part of what we want to hear from. So if everybody says we really like that name, then we don't have to necessarily change it. I just want to throw out there that it may not be called that forever.
Sure.
We want to hear from folks about what they think would be a good representative name.
Thank you.
Sure. What else?
Any other questions?
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Are you going to add a naming thing to your... I saw the presentation last night of infrastructure, so I took your survey online while you were talking.
Yeah.
I didn't ask about names. Are you going to add...
So there's a couple questions in there that get at the idea. There's a couple, like, what are the words that describe the heart and soul and grit of St. Louis? And so some of those answers might then help inform the naming project, rather than just what should it be called, because I think that's a different, you might answer it differently. So we wanted to try to ask different questions. We also have, at the open houses or on the survey, like, write a love letter to St. Louis. What do you love about our city? And write a breakup letter to St. Louis. What are you frustrated about? And so if the more we hear from people about what really means a lot to them or what they're frustrated about, then we'll know possibly what direction to go or avoid based on the kind of feedback we're hearing. So there wasn't a blatant naming question, but it is part of the thinking behind how we would get at. What would be a name that would resonate with a lot of different people and would hopefully represent what the St. Louis, what the city of St. Louis is all about? Yeah.
I know this is way early to think about this, but in terms of a rough idea of when we think construction would start or finish on this?
Sure, yeah, good question. There is no way of knowing for sure, so whatever I say will be wrong, but I'll go ahead and give you a couple ideas. There is actually the very first little piece of Choteau Greenway does exist actually at the new Cortex Metrolink station. So if you've seen just from Boyle to Sarah, it's very brief, but we have went in on that project with Bi-State Metrolink because it's a lot easier to save construction costs when you're doing things together. So we partnered with them on that Tiger grant to get that going. So there is the little itty bitty bit built. In terms of construction, again, it will probably be in different segments. It's not all going to happen at once. That's like almost 20 miles. That would be huge. Some of them will probably get going in the next year or so in terms of the design and engineering. Construction probably wouldn't happen for at least a year or so, just when you think about all the different things that have to happen, surveying, utilities, engagement, hearing from folks, getting all the designs and plans. So it's not as if something's gonna break ground in a year. In two or three, sure. When the whole thing will be done, I have no idea. There will be no way it would be in the next 5 years, but it's possible it's a public-private partnership, depending on the funding that comes in for it as well. We do have sales tax funding that we will dedicate to this, but this is also a bigger effort than just sales tax alone. I'm sure we'll be applying for federal funds. I'm sure we'll get, as we have already, private investment on the project as well. So the timeline for the whole thing could be, you know, 10, 15 years. It could be sooner if there was a lot of interest in funding. It's really hard to say. Whatever I just said will be wrong. But it will get going. I mean, there's momentum and there is funding, so I have no doubt that projects will move forward, but I cannot guarantee how that exactly will play out. And that's partially needing to hear more from folks about, you know, what it's going to take, where it should go. There's still a lot to be decided. Yeah?
Since it's going to take a long time, as you say, and the map will continue to evolve, where do we point to and say, this, aside from their own site and everything, which is very obvious, where would we point to visitors, et cetera, in the next 10 years, saying, this is the latest update, go to Explore Magazine for the Greenway. Where are you going to put that every year? That
sure.
Say, once a year, I can look at it and say, oh, this is the latest.
That's a good question. So right now, you can definitely visit ChoteauGreenway.org. There's also a way to sign up for email or text updates if you would like to get notified whenever there's a new update. What I would guess we would do is something similar to the City Arch River project, where they did a report to the community document every year, so you had that, you know, latest version of whatever that is, which would be published on the website but also distributed in print and available for folks. That has already been discussed as something that we could do once this planning effort right now is probably finished, so probably by the end of this year, kind of start that tradition. So I'll take that back and get back to you.
We also have an email list.
This is Darby. Darby does all of the work, let's face it. She's I will stay for the rest of the meeting, so if you have any other questions, feel free to come find me afterwards. And I really appreciate you giving me some of your time and attention this evening.
Thank you. Next up, we'll have our Alderman Joe Rohde speak for about 20 minutes. He'll give us an update in the first half and a Q&A in the latter half of that 20 minutes.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, thank you.
20 minutes, holy smoke.
On the spot, man.
Emma, thanks for your presentation tonight. By way of background, the whole thing was kind of a brainchild of a guy by the name of Peter Sartino, who was a wonderful, wonderful guy who unfortunately died much too young, about 2 years ago, I guess. And he was one of those guys they recognized as St. Louisan of the Year. So he recognized it and they celebrated it posthumously. So he had died and they awarded it to him the year after he died. He was a real public servant. I had worked very closely with him. He worked for the city for a number of years. And I had the good fortune of being the lead sponsor of the city piece of that. So it had to be done at the state level, the city level, and the county level. So it was a real, and Peter was a remarkable guy and an uncanny ability to get things done in very governmental, bureaucratic snafus. He had a way of kind of understanding that, working its way through. I think some of the excitement are some of the impetus for that project being moved so forward so fast, the Shoto Greenway portion, is just momentum, and the sheer momentum of what's happening in our neighborhood had a lot to do with it. It was, frankly, the folks, probably the person who got this moved up furthest and fastest on the list was a guy by the name of Steve Smith, and Steve is the developer of the Foundry project, and what this is gonna do for residents is just really incredible, because something like this gets some momentum and then all of a sudden pieces start falling into place. So the Foundry comes in, and next door to it is the Armory, and of course all the Cortex stuff. But then this comes in and it's going to be really neat. It's going to go over the old abandoned rail spur, so you'll be able to get on a bike and just kind of land, take your bike over the rail spur and land right in the middle of the Foundry development with restaurants and everything around you, and then continue on through. It's going to be really remarkable. But the excitement of that then stimulates TrailNet. And so TrailNet, the Tower Grove stretch here, is one of the most active bike routes in the area. So TrailNet, which is kind of a separate entity, but kind of similar mission, they're going to be taking the stretch of Tower Grove from, I guess, Tower Grove Park, up through our neighborhood, then probably Vanaventer, and then up Sarah to the new metro stop. And you'll be able to get on the new Greenway by accessing TrailNet's route through the neighborhood. So if you live in Botanical Heights or Shaw or Tower Grove South, you'll be able to hop on TrailNet's route up Tower Grove, get up to Vanaventer, take it up Sarah, and then get on the Shoto Greenway over there. It's going to be a really spectacular thing, and that'll be the first kind of experiment of the connectivity between TrailNet and that project. So it'll be really pretty neat. Had a couple things. I had talked to Vince a little bit, and I think he kind of wanted me to, let me talk and kind of bounce around a little bit. People have asked me at other neighborhood meetings about the airport. Everybody's excited about the airport, very strong feelings about that. There's been a couple of attempts to get things done down at the board that have been kind of fought. I'm not on that committee, so I'm not terribly close to it. But my position, just so everybody is clear, I certainly understand why the mayor's doing it. The city has, you know, very serious financial issues, potentially. And that would be a huge resource that we, of new money that we might be able to do some very, very good and interesting things with. But I can tell you, I have probably gotten more calls and more emails concerning about the whole process of how it's gone about because of, I guess, mostly Rex Sinkfeld, who has been financing it, or much of the study, and it's kind of skewed from the beginning because the way it's designed is the people who are doing the work end up getting you know, their recommendation is kind of, if they recommend to buy it, they get a big pile of money, so it's kind of skewed. They're not exactly objective things. So my position is I don't plan on supporting the sale of the airport unless it's put on the ballot, and we have some indication of that. So anyway, I wanted to go ahead and do that. That's something we get a lot of questions about. Jeff City was a big item. There's a lot of things going on in Jeff City. Our local ward political group's going to be having a couple of state reps or state senators are going to be speaking on Thursday night at 7 o'clock over at the Urban Chestnut. Tomorrow night we have a large development that we've been working on for some time over in the Central West End. Not really in this neighborhood, but it's a town hall meeting that we'll be out. We host it tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Euclid, which is the Shake Shack building. And we have a proposal for the 4,500 block of Cleve, which would be a fairly significant building. It'll be a $50 million building. I don't think it's going to be terribly complicated, but anytime you drop a building of that size into the neighborhood, you know, there's always a lot of concern about that. So we'll be working on that. It largely conforms with something. We had done the first, what they call, form-based code in the city, or probably in the region, was over there. And what a form-based code does is it sets up, intended to be encourage environmentally sustainable development in a less car-dependent environment. So we go through and think about how we can increase density, increase walkability, and that comes with vertical zoning. So we try to do mixed uses, so you share structured parking and do a lot of things like that. We did that initially over in Central West End to experiment with it. What it does is it helps the neighborhoods become much more proactive. In other words, what used to happen years ago is the developer would come to the neighborhood and we wouldn't really didn't have a plan. The developer would say, hey, can I do this? And we'd have to kind of, you know, call an ad hoc meeting and get everybody in the room and say, does this make sense? And we'd kind of have a free-for-all and a bloodletting. And we would, and it would make us very reactive as a neighborhood. So what we did over there, starting, I guess it was about 6 or 7 years ago, we did it. And we went out, we had meetings, and we said, well, you know, we want to go ahead and do this form-based code. What do we want our neighborhood to look like? And so we went ahead and had targeted densities so that some areas over there are completely no height restrictions or anything, like along Kings Highway. That's where the high rise is going up over there. In other areas, we might have a 2 or 3 story building, and we don't want to go ahead and put a 30 story building up next, but we wanted to go ahead and increase density and walkability. There's this trade-off that happens. If your neighborhood gets to a certain level of density, all of a sudden you can start supporting retail without as much parking. And then the parking kind of, it's a catch-22. The more surface parking you have, the harder it is to get the density. So you kind of go ahead and you try to balance that. We've been balancing that for many years over in the West End. Property values are the square foot of the sales price of everything are a lot higher over there, so we've been able to kind of nurse that along. As those values continue to grow over there, we wanted to do the same thing over in this neighborhood, and that led to the form-based code development over here. And again, it's helped, I think, this neighborhood become far more proactive, and it's kind of slowly raised the bar on the development that's occurring over here. The development that'll be reviewed tomorrow night is largely compliant with the form-based code. It's replacing a kind of an older two or three-story apartment building with a surface lot and two-family with a two floors of structured parking and five floors of apartments above it, so it'll be a 200-unit facility. So that's tomorrow night at 6:30. The other thing that's happened, me to talk about something else, sir.
If you had any specific neighborhood updates, or we can move on to neighborhood Q&A for the next. I scheduled 10 minutes, so.
Sure, okay. Go ahead, Dan, get us all started off here.
Thanks, Jill. While we're not interested in these big things, the neighborhood really wants to be able to be involved. They say the partnerships are most impactful when they're rooted in shared goals and decision-making. We're having a really big problem with communication and sharing information with Park Central Development. As you can see, they're not here tonight. They weren't here at the last meeting or the meeting before. But they did assure us that it's most important what we come up with as a neighborhood. As these big things go on around us, the people that own property, their investors,
We want to be involved in keeping equity. Since you were instrumental in starting Park Central, using public funds from HUDs and got them going, where's the accountability? When they're getting public funds, public monies, and private, and then they won't even, I mean, they're getting tens of thousands of dollars on our behalf. They will not even let us see the grants. They are at your gala. They raised funds for the home repair program, which was our initiative. We have not been able to work with them and distributing those funds. So as we get bigger and bigger and more sophisticated, the homeowners and the people that want to be involved, it's obvious because we've got a room full of people. Where is the accountability with Park Central? How do we get them to work with us?
Well, I haven't been here myself for the last couple of months. I had conflicts, but disappointed if they had not showed up, I'm disappointed. They received no money from block grant or anything at this point at all. So they're not receiving public money. I have no appointment on their board. I can't appoint anybody on the board. I have a working relationship with them, but that's the extent of it. I can certainly share your frustration in having them there. I can play on that.
I mean, just you start to afford to assist neighborhoods, building community. If they don't show up, how can we throw them off? Is there a way that we can have them not gather money for us or not participate? I mean, how can we vote them off since if they're here and they're not performing? Is there any kind of accountability? You got them started.
Well, they're a non-for-profit with an independent board of directors. I have no control over that board of directors at this point. They're funded by WashU, St. Louis Shoe, SSM, Cortex, and then they are funded by the various taxing districts, and they voluntarily include members of the community. So you do have a number of members of your community that serve on their board, and I would encourage you to talk to them, as I will. I think they should be at these meetings.
Thank you, Joe, I just want to ask you one question.
I just think right here,
is that a question kind of related to Cortex?
Sure.
A little bit about the things like Coleman development sort of further south on Sarah?
Is sure.
That part of Cortex or independent?
So that is within the Cortex TIF area. That particular TIF subcategory or subarea has not been activated yet. Coleman is very interested in doing something over there, and it's all driven by having an initial tenant. They just have not been able. They got very, very close. We thought we were going to have Square at that facility, but I think Square will eventually go downtown. But for right now, Square has about 800 employees in Florida. So that was the setback we have within that. Yes?
I was wondering about Green Street's acquisition of the farm supply factory in the San Juan area. Do we have any idea about what we want to do with that? The one next one to the
Swan and Musa. Did Ron do that? Yeah, I'm thinking I might have met with them. I'm sorry, I know that they're doing something about it, but I cannot, I'll be honest with you, that was my, did that strike me as terribly controversial, so I haven't.
I was just wondering, I mean, I think they bought it, over 6-7 months ago. I was just wondering if there's
I apologize, I tell you, I know I met with them, and I can't even remember what we talked about. I
just would like to know if you're doing something with it.
No, I think they have plans for it. I don't know. I wish I could have a better answer. I remember meeting with them, and I remember not thinking that it's controversial. I was thinking Ron sits in on most of those meetings really good. So I
said, you didn't know with the WashU at Swan and
well, WashU is that's back office space. And earlier somebody said 5,000. They're talking about 400 or 500 employees, not 5,000 employees. So when you said 100.
And it's
I think they may take down one of the buildings down there.
They do.
And then they're going to go ahead and the rest of it will be kind of cube office building. Office space with lots of
where's that building?
It's what used to be Jefferson Printing, I believe, is the building for PJ. So it's kind of low behind that one of the nice things about that, one of the biggest challenges we have, I was talking earlier about parking.
parking is like always a big challenge. So if you kind of think about urban areas, parking, the difference between surface parking and construction parking is about $20,000 a space. So if you're sitting there and you have a place that requires four people per thousand for office space, you need to provide four parking spaces, and the difference between service, which is about 5,000, and structure, which is 25,000, that's an extra 80,000 square feet, $80,000 for 1,000 square feet of extra space. So if you're building an office building in the suburbs and you have surface, you're building one to see, and you have, a parking garage, that's $80 a square foot in additional cost. And which, you start figuring it, and then you wonder why downtown isn't doing very well with office buildings. It's because that adds, probably $5 a square foot for your annual rent. So all of those things add up. The biggest, one of the biggest opportunities in cities is by mixing these uses, which is what we talk about with the form-based code. When we mix uses, what we end up doing is with structured parking, if we do it right, we increase the utilization rate of structured parking from 8 hours a day up to more like 16, because you'll have people in apartments parking in the evening, and you might have people at retail or office uses during the day. So one of the, and this is surface over there, I know, but one of the big benefits that we're going to get out of that is they will actually let the merchants of Manchester use that in the evening, so you'll be able to go ahead and offload some of the Manchester parking, hopefully, down there. At least that's been a commitment they made to us earlier.
In regards to the
Washington
parking, I know they mentioned that they're going to have shuttles going from the campus to that lot over there. Is there going to be any way to protect the neighbors around there? We all know how inventive the Washington police are about running parking without paying for it. And I wonder if we're going to have issues over there.
There is a, we're like in this period, I think over the next 5 or 2 years, where parking is really going to be a headache. I think many other people believe that autonomous vehicles are going to be here in the next 10 years, and it's going to completely alter all the economics of large cities and parking. With that said, one of the biggest challenges we have, Zen and I have been trading a few emails the last couple of days. What we have attempted to do is we try to create these parking districts that we have scattered throughout the area. We, out of the city, we have all but one or two parking districts are in the 74. So we have about, we're about 10.
Basically one of your districts.
Yeah, and we have about 10 of them that we kind of, and so what happens is we'll put one over, we started up over in this neighborhood, we started up at the 4500 blocks, and we started down around Talmadge and Manchester, and it's just like, you go ahead and put one in, and everybody will stop parking that one and move the next one over, and then we put one in there, and so it's like a quilt. And the same thing's over the West End. We started at the west side of the West End around like Laclede and Euclid, and we've gone just all the way down to Sarah now over there. So it's very similar. Part of our kind of negotiations Cortex is we need things like this in Charlotte Capital. They provide funding for Park Central, and Park Central is supposed to be, at least providing some administration for those parking districts. And of course, I think we charge about $10-$15 per thing. So as we've gotten that was our kind of buffer, is to try to do that. Of course, I guess this last time, I know we've traded a couple emails, I just had a chance.
Yeah, it's been frustrating. I actually just say no. I'm an arbitrary or 42-year block, right in the middle of the road. I've been living here for 40 years. I've gone through the neighborhood back in 15 years ago. I've been living here. I've gone here particularly at the 4500 block to show my Ann Taylor, my apartment street has existed for quite some time. I've been familiar with this time.
Talk just a little loud.
I've been very familiar with the parking district because I've been in the area for quite some time. And I've known people in the 4500 block forever, and I'm okay. I get the existence of it. We have suffered here in the Shoto, the 4300 and 4400 block, the new Shoto district, which has free passes because enforcement's not there. The current deal we have with Park Central Development is
cash from Tyler to the city enforcement program. Ironic. And so it's caused a problem. We have now had it for 6 months, and we know only about 9% compliance. And I think it is the price of development that got fall on that, and we're working on solutions for that. I put together quite a bit of data for solutions, and it's out there. I've talked to every different department I can get a hold of, Kishara, I don't know what you're calling up, etc. So it's not so easy as just quick fast. All the districts we currently have are rubber stamped, and enforcement is an issue with it. So it might sound like, great, we put up a sign that nobody will do it. And again, it just moves to the next block on one hand. On the other hand, now we're trapped near the Ontario Department in front of the village right now because we have an issue with that.
Well, and I'm not saying I'll have a solution. We can certainly talk offline if you like, but I guess we recognize
it's. I printed it out over there. If anybody can get the next door post on it, it's on the table if you want to get it with you. Join the next door, get on the feed.
I think it's that, like just the parking and the funding kind of the neighborhoods, because a lot of people don't have off street parking. But just additionally, the idea that they're going to have to shuttle, and you know, I've used the Washington shuttles before, and the shuttle drivers, I know they have staff, but they'll also just kind of drop you off if you ever ask. I'm worried about that shuttle during the rush hours at Washington. Leaving home is already a big nightmare. Like coming down Iron Taylor, Tower Grove, all of those streets get super backed up from Manchester. Mm-hmm. And if you have shuttles dropping people off randomly, going all the way down to this new site.
Especially since it's a charge, they're charging for parking on that parking lot. To avoid.
Are they going to charge parking?
$50. Yeah. It's $70 over at the university. So the idea that someone would pay $50 to park a mile away is kind of laughable. I have a feeling a lot of people will be.
So I'm worried about it's going to actually increase the amount of people parking in their neighborhood because they know the shuttles will drop them off along this route. And mm-hmm. So these streets that don't need parking zones right now, and like my area doesn't have parking zones, we currently don't need them. I'm worried that the shuttles will actually exacerbate that.
I would envision almost the whole neighborhood leaving at some point. It's just, you know, that's happening. And, you know,
I don't think signs are a bad thing. The way that these signs are currently implemented and regulated and enforced is a bad thing. So we
just
think it is the way it's currently enforced, which is fine.
I don't think we
need
to figure it out now. I just want to know that someone, and
yeah.
It sounds like you guys are already talking about that.
Right. And I'm going to be meeting with the treasurer, so she's over enforcement. And this is a problem we have right now, it's not, but there, all the processes we have in place don't involve enforcement. And you can put all sorts of happy signs up, and they can work in theory. You're not getting properly enforced. And there's not a lot of solutions for that. But the solutions can be the types of sign. And honestly, I don't think we need a sign that says, come in. We just need a sign.
We also need communication with the employees. Like, Washington needs to be over to their employees.
I think that is happening in the Shore District, because after I fly out of the car for several weeks in a row, suddenly not a single Washington person showed up. Well, I was trying to prevent them from getting here. And also getting them away.
I would like to acknowledge, we were talking earlier about Park Central, the executive director is with us tonight. So, make sure that everybody's aware that they did show up. And,
yeah, we had, we work in 9 different neighborhoods, and we have an infrastructure committee meeting last night, so we just hired some additional staff, so staff is scheduled to be at least several meetings with Temple High School last night, so just a lot of the limited staff we have to, always get it. But I did talk to Vince last week, so we communicated that Cal Holy with that new staff, or we're not assigned staff person, always wants to meet or something like that. So, but then also, there are several people I know that are here that are on some of the neighborhood committees that for the neighborhoods I work out of. So, we did traffic updates on to the development there. We're also trying to get updates on the infrastructure committee. So,
are you going to have a golf playing game next Tuesday?
Yeah, 7:14. So we on Wednesday,
before the office put it up on the website.
Okay, the website currently is being published to be on as far as the next meeting. So is this like next meeting tomorrow?
Oh my God, am I time up?
We're a little over time, yeah, but that's all right. It was a good Q&A. What's up?
That's what we have to do for the last act, always sit there. Apple.
Unless he has an update. He was supposed to talk.
Any other questions for me, or I think my time's over.
I think you have one question. But
Joe, can you give us any update about the status of the vacant land immediately south of Interstate 64 at Kings Highway? Some people call the Drury project.
I have no update to speak of. I haven't heard anything definitively. I know we were working with a group in the neighborhood and trying to get some communication.
I'm sorry. A little bit of information about that. I know that Brian Phillips, maybe a week ago.
We have stuff on the website.
Along with the RC and had received them that when they do select developer, they will be able to engage with a site plan and a footprint for us to get feedback on and kind of get involved. So that would be one thing. And then I also communicated to him the facts and the history of Drury in the neighborhood. He's very familiar with that stuff as well. Just a well-evidenced argument of why, of how Drury is not engaged with anybody, how we're all in the dark and how we got buildings crumbling and all that kind of stuff. It's a very long and informative discussion. And he did take all that and going to talk to his board about it. So we are being heard. We are getting some progress here, and we will have a chance to get feedback. And there's always the idea that even if they do select developers for their land, that isn't final. If they select a developer and they come to the neighborhood and the neighborhood says, no, we don't like this plan, they can always dump that developer to us.
So
is
the plan in the middle?
That's good. I don't know what Drury's planning to develop. WashU, he said, as far as most of the RC goes to WashU, they're not planning to use that land for themselves. They are planning to sell it to
I think we will be out of time.
Okay.
I do appreciate it.
No.
Thank you. Speaking on Michael's behalf, we do have minutes for, he did speak at last month's meeting, and we have minutes from that posted on our website. It's really robust. He did a really good job presenting. There's a lot of information there, so you can just go to forestparksoutheast.com and you can click on latest minutes and read about that. Yes?
I just want to say that I read those meetings. I thought that was really great presentation of information, very helpful. Sense of what was going on.
I think we have time right now for community speaking arrangements. Anybody from the community have anything to update? Any concerns? Anything to present? No? Abdul, since you are here, do you have 5 minutes to give us an update on anything regarding Park Central or the neighborhood itself? I know you weren't here for most of the meeting, so I don't know if we'll circle back on anything that you might talk about, but do you have anything to share or provide, any updates regarding the neighborhood?
Not really at this point. I think as far as the development, I know that's always bigger issue whether you get a development over there or not, I think it's Drury several people in the neighborhood about that, so I'll continue to push that forward, that message forward, and carry that, because that is a big concern. Other than that, we have quite a few other things that are really just kind of growing in the pipeline right now. As you know, quite a few businesses that are coming. Missouri Foundation for Health for the Preservation Board, and the building we're in now, one of the buildings that's on the corner got denied for, that's falling down the back, got denied for demolition. So Missouri Foundation for Health has been able to save this building and the other building that's next to it right now, they're in the holding pattern, because what's happened is that they can't get a demo permit from that building. So one of the things that happened when it came before the development committee, and the development committee, based on the reports, saw from HOK, basically said, hey, the building is not So that was the bigger piece. So basically, I've been working with them to try to get that done. But more importantly, I've been kind of going back and forth with the preservation board, because the preservation board, through the development committee, they said, hey, we want to see a replica building. The neighborhood said, you know, through the process, hey, that's what we want to see. The preservation board is kind of, in my opinion, stepping over the voice of the neighborhood, saying that we want to see something else doesn't want to see. So we're kind of going back and forth with that to make sure we carry that. Development is all over the place. I think we see so much going on. So Palm of the building phase two, Rome does want to start it. It's been selected for that. Ron McDonald House, Noah and David, when they're going to break that ground for that, there will be some progress hopefully in the next 3 months. They'll come back with a final update on what the final building will look back, will look like, so they'll be coming back to the development committee to give a final overview of what that building's going to look like. So, that's all showed on the time of I don't know if they gave an update on the park, showed on the park. I know there's a lot of questions. So, an update was here. I can give it. So, that was a pretty much
updates.
It just did the neighborhood updates.
But we've been asking, like, for 3 months, we really want to work with home repair, with people that want to have some equity, that want to stay. We've not been able to, after we requested in public and it's in our meeting minutes, we want to see the grant. We want to work with Park Central and help allocating the funds for home repair. There are a lot of people that are being passed over or they're getting no help at all.
So you also have to remember, we have 9 neighborhoods that
we remember that.
So what happens is, give money. Some of that money is earmarked. So, for instance, we raised $36,000 at our gate. That first $20,000, somebody gave it for Fountain Park for the neighborhoods work of Delta. So they gave it for us. So we have to work with that. We're working with the development court. Of course, I'll use the development court to get some dollars and request specifically for the neighborhoods. So what will probably end up happening is once we do that, what we're going to do from a board standpoint is making sure that throughout the service area that we have due diligence so that the decisions are made, that the decisions are going to be made and that it will impact the neighborhood so that people really can't get it. So the home repair fund will be used for seniors. And when I call people to go to work before people go to work every day, and you know that they go to work every day, what happens is they still, you know, can't get over the hump in the home repair. So there will be a process that we get ready to do that we will have.
At the end of this month,
also, so I just have to push back just a little bit on that, because there are neighborhood committees that are set up, the residents are there. So the residents are there, and people get this information. These are residents that are there, even the infrastructure committee that's there. Those are residents that signed this plan in this part. That's not Park Central. We're just simply facilitating that. But the development committee, those are majority residents in my home.
That's what we want to work with. We really want all that money to save people's houses. We got people, but we really want a commitment that you guys are talking. We're all working with the neighborhood association. That's all. We still put it.
I will commit to work with people in the neighborhood. But that is a combination of people who's on the committee, like Mark's on the neighborhood association, who's on the development committee. He has a large portion that he represents within the neighborhood. Alan is here today. He's on the infrastructure committee. So when we look at other dollars that come down for whether it's more capital, looking at how those things are done, you know, we can take that feedback. Vince Shorten is now also president of the committee, is also on the infrastructure committee. So there is a process for feedback, you know, that comes with it. So, and I've never had a problem with communicating. The thing is, I don't have information. I just want to get that information.
Represented because they don't report back to us. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's like you're like freelancing.
Yeah, that's what they do. They pick their members on the board, and then those are the information that we don't get.
Well, I don't think it's far, Bill. My request for this kind of sounds like what they're going to do is have someone here at this meeting to kind of update us on the kind of minutes and what's being discussed at the development committee. I think it's hard for us to weigh in when we are not actually having the information delivered to us.
Well, one of the things is that with the development committee, that is a neighborhood committee. That is not a park central committee. It's not. It is a neighborhood committee. And there's always public comment at the committee. Those people are your neighbors. So if you look at Mark, Patrice Willis, Hassan Moorhead, Sharon Blaine, and you look at other people in the whole makeup of that and the residents and the residents of requirements, those are people who you interact with. You know, those are people who can get that information back. Even with the project that's going on with the development committee and the Washi Land, there are people on that development committee that are representing with the group. So what I'm saying is, to your point, is that have no problem coming back and giving an update to the neighborhood. Have no problem with that. At the same time, to the neighborhood association, but there are also different groups that there's a local neighborhood as well. So we just have to do a better job. I think everyone of you reaching out, coming to the development committee, and then us also doing that as well, or designating the neighborhood who's a part of the neighborhood committee of this organization, who sits on the committee, to come back. And actually, too, so that if PJ Ernst comes to the committee, he'll come to this meeting as well. He's on the committee as well as Mark Manderford, and Mark is a part as well. So I think it's a combination of both.
To those points, I feel, I look at them as like volunteers. You know, they're volunteering to take more time out of their schedule and go to an extra meeting. I have an 80-hour job, 80-hour week job. I can't go to those meetings all the time. So I think that if you want to have someone who's designated a job, from the committee to come and speak of these things, I think that's fine. If there's an employee who wants to do it, I think that's fine. But I think there needs to be something regularly structured. So I think like this would be a good opportunity to say, at the meeting a week before the development committee meeting, this is the agenda that's proposed. Looking at the website right now, I don't see the amounts on the front page of their meeting. And looking at the committee, Forest Park Development Committee page, there's actually no agenda posted yet.
So the first thing that I said is that a meeting will take place next Tuesday, and what we do is either on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning the following week before, that will be uploaded. There was no meeting last night, but if you go back, there is a meeting for me. You may pack this on.
Yeah, I've looked through all the website very, very diligently, and the meetings that are listed on the front page and the minutes that are published on the actual Forest Park Development Committee page. There are several minutes or meetings where the minutes are not posted on there. And so I think it's really hard to say, look at those pages and you'll understand what's going on. The pages don't actually reflect that. And then I also think it's hard to expect us to all kind of refresh these pages regularly to figure out when there is a meeting and when there's not.
Well, the meeting is standard, like it's the 14th of the month. So yeah.
Sometimes.
And you have got minutes that don't come to
a table. There was a meeting last month, and then looking at the actual web page, there's a meeting that was announced for the for the May one. There wasn't one from April. Looking at the minutes page, there's one from November 2018 as minutes, and then there's minutes from the March 2019 meeting.
And if you go to the front page?
Like, we're going to the Forestburg Southeast Development Committee page.
But if you go to the Park Central homepage, you go down, you will see. Go to the neighborhoods, then you have to go to the neighborhood. Then you go process that we're going through right now for this. So,
do you have a timeline for that process?
I don't have time enough for this in the time we have to pass. I'll give you the next 3 or 4 minutes.
So you're really
going to
make
some
of us
more
accessible
for
the website
that
we will use
for the entire website? Because it's more than that, because we're also going to be partnering
with the social time. Can you vote
for a German? Just one last
question. One sec. All right, we are going to wrap it up. Before we adjourn, a few announcements. On August 6th, there is National Night Out at Shadow Park. Please be there. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Post it on Facebook. Thank you. Motion to adjourn, Dan. Thank you.